Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuc. High Mud Comedy Festival presents Josh Gondelman in a night of stand-up comedy at Mass Mocha in North Adams, Massachusetts, tomorrow night at 8 p.m.
I mentioned earlier that I was a teacher, and that's true. Before this was my job, I used to teach preschool. That's real. Yeah, and I think it kind of explains why my entire vibe is like hipster Mr. Rogers. I love that job. I learned so much from it. I learned about patience. I learned about meeting people on their level, not assuming what anybody wants or needs from you. I think that's really beautiful. Some teachers, though, will oversell the benefits of the job to others and to themselves. Some teachers you meet will say stuff like, you know, I learn as much from those kids as they learn from me. And if a teacher tells you that, they're a liar. Or they're just a straight-up horrendous teacher. Because the entire job description of being an educator is that children learn more from you than you learn from them. That's what you're trying to do every day. I was teaching four-year-olds. They didn't even know their parents' first names. Some of them weren't clear that their parents had first names. So imagine what a sweet, dumb goon I would have to be to learn more from those children than they were learning from me. Week in, week out, just coming home to my wife like, hey, babe. I was at work today talking to the kids, and did you know all the crayons look different, but they taste the same? That's messed up, right? They should do something about that. I learned as much from those kids as they learned from me, though, I'll tell you what.
Josh Gondelman is a stand-up and writer who has earned Peabody Awards, Emmys, and WGA Awards for his work on HBO's Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. He is currently a writer and producer for Desus and Marrow on Showtime, which was just renewed for a second season. He has a reputation for being a true mensch and among the nicest guys in comedy. His new book, Nice Try, is available from Harper Perennial, and his most recent stand-up album, Dancing on a Weeknight, was released in April of this year. Josh Gondelman joins us now. Josh, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you for having me.
You are a stand-up comic. That is what you'll be doing at Mass Mocha, is stand-up comedy. You also work on comedy television programs. Did you start doing stand-up first or writing comedy first?
I definitely started doing stand-up professionally before I was writing comedy professionally. But I always wrote funny things, like even as a kid. And I went to college for, I graduated with a fiction major, a creative writing major in fiction, and I wrote funny short stories. And like, I went in to college having like written like a funny play that got a little attention as like a high school kid in like the Massachusetts high school drama competition. So I always wrote funny things, but I started doing stand-up when I was 19 and started getting paid a small amount of money when I was like 20, and I didn't work in TV for several years after that.
When you craft jokes for yourself to perform for in your stand-up shows, how is that different than writing for other comic voices on the professional writing jobs that you have?
So much of my stand-up is just about my life and relationships and, you know, having a small fat dog. And as hard as I tried to convince John Oliver last year to do an 18-minute deep dive on how my dog is actually more important than you think, it didn't make it to air.
Your book, Nice Try, was recently published by HarperCollins, which also is full of personal stories about your life. Some funny, all very touching. It's really revelatory and a wonderful read. What made you want to write a book?
Well, thank you for the very kind compliment. I had been at Last Week Tonight for a few years at that point, and I felt like I had my sea legs enough that I was like, okay, I'm really excited to be here, but I think I know what I'm doing, and I'm not living in terror. So that I felt like I was ready to take on a personal project that was more my voice, that maybe could reach a wider audience than just doing stand-up at comedy clubs in the city and occasionally on the road. And so I wrote a proposal for this book, and I had the good fortune to sell it to Stephanie Hitchcock at Harper Perennial, who is an amazing editor. And it was just like a really wonderful experience. And I think it was like a chance to get kind of my sensibility and my jokes and stories out a little broader than I could have otherwise.
You said a moment ago that you decided you could write the book because you felt like you knew what you were doing at your television job, so you could take on a personal project. Could you jump back to before you felt that way and tell me more about what that living in terror was like? What working on a big show like Last Week Tonight is? Obviously, it's a wonderful and informative and deeply researched program. Tell me more about what your work was there and what about it took some time to feel comfortable doing.
I had applied as a writer and was hired to do their social and digital stuff for the first year that I was there. So when I moved, which was very exciting, and I got to know everybody a lot, but there's the double-edged sword of, like, I saw how hard all the writers worked and how funny and brilliant they were. And so when I moved over to be part of that team in the second season, I was intimidated because I was like, oh, this is a lot, and the people who do it are amazing, and they have a year of practice already. So I felt like it was a lot of, like, bringing myself up to speed on how to go from even just, like, the formatting of how to write a script and what that looks like on the page, and, like, how to write a punchline for a television joke as opposed to an essay or a stand-up bit or a tweet. And so it took a little while to just get acclimated. And, you know, not obviously acclimated doesn't mean dazzling at it. And I felt like I got better and better with time. But at first I was like, oh, there's a learning curve here that I'm the only one adjusting to at this point. And so it was like an exciting and effortful period.
You did leave HBO for Showtime. What went into that decision?
I had been at Last Week Tonight for 5 seasons and written for the show itself for 4. And I got a call at the very end of the season, right after we'd wrapped, basically, to interview for this other position. And I really love Jesus and Mary's Sensibility. I think they're so funny. And I got an opportunity to take on like a writer and producer position here, which was really exciting. I thought it would be a chance to, like, learn new skills and work with hosts with a totally different voice. And one of the great parts about it is I think both shows I'm really proud of the show we put out, but I don't feel like I moved over to a show where I'm now, like, chasing what I would have done at the other show. Like, I think we can tackle similar stories in different ways or totally different stories. And I don't feel like I'm like, oh, okay, what would John do? Let's try to do that before he can do it.
Right. Yeah. No, I didn't even think about that aspect of it. They are completely, completely all brilliant, but completely different hosts with different voices and different ways of approaching the entire program.
Yeah. And that's like, that's the real joy of it, is I don't feel like, oh, I moved. Well, I mean, like, I'm working in the same building. So I moved 3 floors up on the elevator to do the same thing in a slightly different office space, you know? So I feel like I'm doing very different stuff in the same sphere, and I have skills that translate, and I'm learning these skills, and also just, like, working in a totally different style, which is, like, I can feel like a different kind of professional growth than I would have had if I had stayed at Last Week Tonight and continued to, like, build those skills that I've been honing the last few years.
You were named one of Variety's new leaders in TV this year. Congratulations.
Thank you. I was very surprised. I thought it was a prank when I got the email.
Oh, no. Did you sincerely think it was a prank?
There was a brief moment where I thought it was a prank. I didn't know. I couldn't answer the question of who would benefit from this prank.
So there you go.
I eventually trusted it. And if it is a prank at this point, kudos on the incredible long game, because it made it into the magazine.
Does recognition like that, or the, you know, you've also won Peabody and Emmy Awards when you were working on Last Week Tonight. Does that kind of recognition matter moment to moment as you do the job, or is it kind of like a just something nice to hear and feel, and then you know, move on and get back to the grind?
Definitely the second thing, because it's like a lovely feeling to be acknowledged and to be appreciated in that kind of, like, industry-wide way. But, like, for me, I got into comedy and television writing to, like, make comedy. So, like, making the show is, like, the real excitement and pleasure and the thing I'm enthusiastic for. And, like, you know, if you get into TV writing for the idea of accolades, like, if that's the motivating factor, it seems like a very tough road to hoe, as it were, because it's like you can only control the things you make, and sometimes you don't even, you know, depending on where you're working, you don't even have that much control over that. So I think just, like, getting to do the work and, like, working with people I really like, and also truly the same thing about making the show as it is winning these awards is, like, it's not just a reflection of me, it's a reflection of, like, getting to work for and with excellent people on stuff I'm really proud of. Like, there are so many brilliant people that are deserving of recognition, and I've had the, like, immense good fortune to work on shows that people know and enjoy. So, like, that has given me just a huge leg up of, like, the circumstance of getting to be at places that that are like well regarded and work with people who are amazing.
I know that the story, the full story surrounding this is sad and bittersweet and long-ish, or can be long to get the full idea. But I wanted you, and now you're freaked out. What is she going to ask me about?
No, that's fine. I'm always ready to make it too real and uncomfortable.
It's the hashtag A Good Game, your charity fundraising NFL thing. Tell me where the idea for that came from, and obviously explain it for people who aren't familiar.
So the New England Patriots, the historically successful football franchise, have a lot of like individual ties to the Trump administration, including like Tom Brady, the quarterback, being personal friends with Donald Trump, it seems like, and Bill Belichick, the coach, having written him a letter of encouragement that Trump read in New Hampshire right before the election in 2016, and then Bob Kraft, the owner. In addition to apart from those things, mm-hmm. I have like an affinity for the team, having grown up being a fan. And my grandmother, as she, in like the kind of the last months of her life a few years ago, the last thing she could like plan to enjoy and put on her schedule, as it were, was watching the Patriots play. So I have this like deep rooted family connection to the team, and the team has this horrible, fraught, troubling relationship with the president, of whom I'm not a fan.
Right.
And so we started, my friend Emma Sandow and I started this fundraising campaign for kind of similarly conflicted Patriots fans to donate during the Super Bowl when they would score, or there would be an interception, or, you know, just various contingencies. Anything you could bet on in kind of a degenerate way, we turned into like hopefully a charity fundraising drive. And we've done it. The plan was to do it because they were in the Super Bowl in 2017. And that's what we did, and it worked out well. And then they made it to two more consecutive Super Bowls, you know, winning the first and third, losing the second. And so we've done it every year since. And it's like, you know, it doesn't offset anything, but hopefully it is like, well, for people that feel like this is an ingrained part of the culture, can you also do something nice while you're watching this team with these like troubling political affiliations?
And the NFL itself, of course, is problematic.
I know.
I mean,
there's so much, right? Like the with the Colin Kaepernick over the weekend,
right, of course,
finally getting a tryout, and then the NFL not wanting to like have the video released. So you know, and so he moved the location, obviously, because if there were no cameras, the NFL would just be like, well, he's bad at throwing, that's why he doesn't have a job.
Right.
And like, clearly, that's not the case because there's abundant video.
Another sort of pushing the good thing that you do frequently is you give strangers pep talks on Twitter. Tell me how that started, please.
I was having kind of a rough career period, and it was like late at night, and I was just thinking to myself, I wish there were someone to just tell me a good thing, kind of unsolicited or mildly solicited. And I was like, well, I have this kind of modest internet following, and I could tell whatever 5 or 10,000 people, hey, I'm feeling not great. Would anyone say a nice thing? And I would be flooded with replies that felt more than I needed. So I thought maybe if instead I offered to say something nice to people, I would get the same charge of like this kind of just transfer of enthusiasm and encouragement without having to be like, please validate me, 10,000 people. And so I still do it pretty regularly, and it's strangers and sometimes it's friends. And sometimes I'll post online and like a friend will text me and just be like, hey, if you're doing this, you know, I didn't want to reply publicly, or so it's just like a nice little thing to do. I do it a lot when I'm on the road doing stand up. I'll do it after a show because I'm like a little, you know, you're a little abuzz from performing,
right?
Post
show high.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, I'm rather go back to my hotel and like get into bed and do this than like try to stay out and like maintain that by drinking or fighting. I don't know, what do people do for fun?
When I was reading your book, there's a part where you mentioned that you used to give people cans of like chicken soup if it seemed like having a bad day. And I made a note. I was like, this is kind of like an early analog iteration of the Twitter pep talks.
It absolutely
but maybe
is.
Weirder.
It was in high school. Definitely weirder and less helpful. It was in high school, and it was like, where do you even heat up a can of chicken noodle soup at high school? Like, we didn't have microwave privileges or a stovetop. So it was just like a weird thing. And it was, I'm like so deeply humiliated at this point by that. But it was like, I don't know, I was a sweet kid. I just had no idea how anything worked.
Josh Gondelman will perform stand-up at Mass Mocha on Saturday at 8 p.m. MassMocha.org for more information. Nice Try is available now from HarperCollins. Josh, it's been a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. It was great talking with you.
Once again, stand-up comic Josh Gondelman will perform in Club B10 at Mass Mocha in North Adams, Massachusetts, tomorrow night at 8 p.m. MassMocha.org for ticket information. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.